Hello, everyone. I'm Michelle Spencer, and welcome to the LMS Deep Dive podcast series, where I am joined by the folks that spoke at last year's ILTACon on the LMS Shootout panel. We are going to be alternating each month between a podcast and a peer share, giving people some ideas and also a forum to share ideas with each other about how to get more value out of your LMS. Our next event is going to be a course scheduling peer share on January 25th. And our next topic will be LMS reporting, which will be a podcast in February and then a peer share in March. Today's topic is course scheduling in your LMS. And as I mentioned, I'm joined by several participants from firms throughout the United States. So if you would, please say hello and remind us again which LMS you're currently using. We'll start off with Sean McGinty.
I'm Sean McGinty, the Senior Learning and Development Engineer at Carlton Fields. We are using eLogic Essentials LMS.
Great. And next is Claire Morris.
Hi, I'm the IT Training and Business Analysis Manager at McDermott Will & Emery. We have 20 offices across the world with approximately 1,100 attorneys, and we use Saba Cloud LMS.
Great. And Lida Pinkham.
I'm the Technology Training Manager at Ice Miller, and we have about 300 attorneys, just over 600 employees in 7 locations, and we use the Tutor Pro LMS.
Great. So we're going to start by talking about what your strategy is for scheduling courses. And one thing I find that might affect that is whether learners are able to request courses through your LMS. So if you would, please address that. And we'll start this question off with Sean.
Yes, our users can request courses through the LMS. However, people pretty much still just shoot an email to either the trainer they're most comfortable dealing with or the department's email address. Our strategy for scheduling courses differs probably in each office. The way we work, though, is we offer recursive training in all offices at varying frequencies. Where we have a trainer that is their home office, they offer recursive training every week, live, in the office, instructor-led learning. And then that alternates based on the proximity of satellite offices to that trainer. The way we select our classes is a little multifaceted. We do a lot of SurveyMonkey polls. We pay attention to the requests, whether it's through the LMS or via email or elevator conversation, what have you. Additionally, we go through the help desk tickets and we see what their call drivers are to see if there's a way that we can come up with something to help those. Rollouts are rollouts. They happen whether we want them to or not. Scheduling is really all about headcount and resource management. We offer each training session and a rollout at least 3 times the number it's required to be offered to meet headcount.
Wow, that's a lot.
We want to make sure no one has the excuse to say it didn't fit in their schedule or it wasn't offered during a time that was convenient.
Right, exactly. So how about you, Claire? What is your strategy for scheduling courses?
Well, firstly, we don't have a facility or function whereby users can actually request the training themselves. So like Sean said, most, they're very happy and that's the way we like it. They email, or obviously it's been done in conjunction with a conversation with them to analyze what it is that they actually need as a group or individually in any case, but they can't actually just request it through the system itself. Although we do have an intranet site with our training linked to it, our training page linked to it, and they can actually do a direct email and link through there and request something. So we do have it in that regard, but really not many people use it, to be honest. They ring us or email us in any case. As far as scheduling strategy is concerned, weekly trainer meetings whereby we discuss and arrange our strategy for scheduling our courses each week and on a monthly basis. So each month our trainers will put out a new session of classes for that month, which has been decided and agreed upon between the trainers themselves during the actual trainers meeting. Sometimes we run the same classes due to popularity or needs more than once over several months, but most of the time we try to mix it up and do different sessions each month. which is also sent to the HR department so that they see also what we're doing and what's out there, and give us the backing and ask them to come to training. Like Sean, we analyze help desk tickets. We know what kind of problems and issues are arising, so we may amend our training schedules for that. We do an annual survey, both for attorneys and non-attorneys, for training needs and analysis. And also, of course, whatever we have planned, then there's always the individual requirements that come from HR saying, you know, they feel certain groups or individuals may need additional training in certain topics. And so, and at that time, we'll amend our courses according to that. And we try to always make available, as well as ILT and hands-on classes, that there's always a virtual tool as well, so that they can come to virtual training and attend virtual sessions if they can't come to a hands-on class. So we always try to make something available for everybody. That's how we look at it.
Great. And what about you, Lida?
So like Claire, our LMS does not allow users to request classes, except if a class on the calendar is full, then they can request it. So it's a little unusual. And it does have an auto-enroll feature, so if a place in that class opens, they do get auto-enrolled. So we similarly get a lot of our requests just informally through emails. We really, in practically every communication that we send out, we ask people for feedback. What do they want? What do they need? So there's lots of opportunities for them to do that. As far as planning, the last couple of years, we've kind of had an informal survey, actually not even a survey, just like, let us know what you want. And we didn't get great feedback. And so this year we decided to do a more formal survey, and we got lots and lots of feedback. So I'm looking forward to looking at that and planning out the schedule based on the feedback we got from what people want training on. And then we also, at the end of the year, kind of look at our new hire training and decide, you know, what is it that we can do to make it better. So this year we've offered sort of a series of classes specifically for new hires, and we've revised that, and we're doing that again next year. So that, like, right away we know we have a certain set of classes we're going to offer every month through the whole year, just specifically for that audience. Although sometimes we find people that are not new hires take those classes too, because they want a refresher, or maybe they never took the class to begin with. And then, similar to Claire, every month we get together as trainers and look at requests we've had, the needs, our availability, and plan out the next month's schedule. And I think that's pretty much what we do as well. Rollout, you know, come into play. And then the one other additional thing that we have is we started a competency program in 2014. And so every time a new competency comes up, a new core competency, we also build training around that. And not always, but a lot of times there's an instructor-led component that goes with that. So then that gets incorporated to the schedule. Typically, anytime we have a new class, we try to offer it a couple of times the first month. And then based on how popular it is and how many people want it, we usually try to also offer at least one more month, because maybe that wasn't a good month for people, or that schedule didn't work out for them. So typically we're trying to offer any new classes at least 2 months in a row.
Great. So you guys shared some really good ideas, and some things that I picked out from that is, you know, using help desk tickets to determine need, using surveys to determine need. I love the idea of a series or something around competency, because it is well documented and researched that people like to attain mastery. And so if you can show them that they're gaining levels of knowledge, then that's a really effective way to do things. So great ideas. Virtually was mentioned briefly. So is your instructor-led training done primarily in person or virtually? And how does that affect your strategy? And Lida, if you could just continue keeping the ball rolling here.
Sure. We do a mix. And actually, all of our classes, there's just three trainers. And we have two trainers in our main office and one trainer in our Columbus office. And so the other offices don't have a trainer. So what we tend to do is whatever trainer is teaching their class, they actually teach it in person at their location. And then we offer a WebEx component to that class. Sometimes the first couple of sessions we'll have a trainer in the other office just go up to that training room to provide support, make sure everything's going well. But usually once a class is ready and going, usually just one trainer handles it. when we do our classes, when I say WebEx component, that doesn't necessarily mean that people are attending from their desk. We have a lot of secretaries that find that a challenge. So typically what we'll do is we'll book a conference room. And so that training will be delivered to that conference room via WebEx. But then some secretaries are able, and attorneys and paralegals, it's easy for them because they have their own office to attend a WebEx. So we do a mix. Sometimes we'll do a WebEx only class. That's not very often for us. Typically we'll always be in person. And then some of our smaller offices have given us feedback that they really, really like having that live person there for training. So whenever we travel to those offices, we will always ask them, you know, we've offered these classes recently. Are there any of these that you want us to offer in person? And they almost always say, yes, please come teach, you know, ABC in person. So we try to work that into our schedule as we're traveling.
Great. Yeah, I know that the smaller offices are sometimes a challenge, and it is good to have that in-person support periodically. But as we all know, with shrinking budgets, not always possible. So Sean, what are you guys doing?
Well, currently, I think our instructor-led training is done live and in person about 95% of the time. Like LIDA, we have a lot of our smaller satellite offices requesting a physical presence. So we've built that in, whether we hit them quarterly or semi-annually, depending on cost, is what makes it up. But, you know, we have an Adobe Connect server. We use it for virtual training. We don't use it a whole lot at the moment. We're working on that. One of the things that is in the budget for next year is we are getting a bunch of large, obnoxious, over-the-ear, firm-branded headphones to distribute so that the secretaries can attend at their desk. We really want to drive interactivity. It's one of the reasons why we got the Adobe Connect server, so that we can take a Captivate module that's specific to what we're teaching and drop it in there so that everybody can interact with it. And then it tells us whether or not they were really paying attention and absorbed anything, or if we need to follow up with them on an individual basis. For us, really, it's about that interactivity. You know, we've got no facial cues to feed off of, so we do a lot of polling. We do a lot of things where we ask them to hit the raise hand button. We have a chat room. And personally, for really well-done virtual training, I think it really requires two trainers. One person to run the training, the other to be the producer and make sure that everything in the room and all the components go off without a hitch.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right there. Having done the peer shares, you know, having that extra set of eyes and hands for technical issues, all of that. And also, you also brought up a good point of building in that interactivity. So I really think if you are going primarily virtually, you've got to redesign your courses. You can't just present the exact same outline. So I think that's a good point. Claire, what about you? What are you guys doing?
Yes, and I just want to also agree with you and Sean about that, having somebody like a team effort with the virtual training, because we learned the hard way. We went through the trenches on that one and, you know, found it, obviously it was difficult when someone couldn't join a call, or maybe the number had been published incorrectly, whatever it might be, or just technical issues that come along unexpectedly. The person presenting cannot be dealing with all of that. So yes, we've gone through that. So we've perfected it now, but I emphasize you definitely need two people on hand to do that. Our ILTs are done primarily in person. So in all of our offices where there is a trainer, those classes are done hands-on by trainer in person. Same with our new hire training, etc. Except obviously we have offices that don't have a trainer on site, and then that has to be all new hire training, and our scheduled sessions have to be conducted by virtually in any case. What we do is also, as I said earlier, we do make sure that all of our scheduled classes most have a virtual sessions advertised as well. So people have the choice, for whatever reason, if they wish to either attend a live session, or if that timing wasn't correct, they can attend maybe at the other virtual times that we've advertised. What we tend to do on a regular basis is we have the trainer on site of that local office is the person conducting the training sessions. And then we also advertise our virtual sessions. They may be conducted for everybody. It could even be across the firm, certainly in the US, and then the European trainer would do the Europe and Asia areas. But we certainly have a SME, so we'll take, if it's maybe an Adobe upgrade or Best Authority, while we may have scheduled sessions for Best Authority going on in on site. We'll also have the virtual training done by one of the team that might be deemed as the SME in that particular topic. Same with Excel. We have one or two on the team who are real Excel experts, and we regularly run virtual training held by an SME because we can gather in obviously more people by doing it that way. And we use Saba Meeting or Skype. We have WebEx as well, but we tend to use the Saba Meeting for our virtual training, or we can use Skype as well internally for our training.
So we've got quite the variety of tools being used with WebEx and Adobe Connect and then your tools. So how do you handle multi-site classes being held at the same time? So you kind of have already touched on that. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, I wanted to say, Dartha, that we are blessed with a good-sized training team, and I think that's obviously important, and that's why we're very lucky, so that we don't really have so-called any issues or problems when we do have to have multi-site classes, you know, all running at the same time. We are pretty much have a trainer that's available to do that. So we're lucky there, extremely lucky. But we also have, as I said earlier, yes, the availability to do it virtually. And that's how we would handle it if there was any conflict or for the offices that don't have an on-site trainer. We also build in, I think Sean said that earlier, we also build in regular visits, maybe twice a year, to those offices. And it's especially if we got some new people coming in, maybe a new group of attorneys and secretaries, or just a couple of new hires, we'll take that timing, so to speak, to take a trainer down there or to whichever office it is, and also conduct refresher sessions on all sorts of things, rather than just go there for a group of for the new hire training. We'll build in that whole 4 week so that we can address any other build up of training requirements or items or issues that have arisen. So we'll try to do that at least twice a year, according to budget, schedules, projects, you know, usual things.
Right, right, great. And Lyda, how about you? Anything to add there?
I kind of mentioned already how we do, like almost all of our classes are multi-site, where we'll build in a WebEx component and the conference rooms for those other people so that they can attend. But as far as supporting that infrastructure, we actually are really lucky here too, in that we have an office services department and our help desk, and between the two, they help facilitate the connections in all the remote offices, so that we don't have to worry about that. So that makes it really nice. Everybody knows what they're connecting to, what time to get connected, making sure the audio and everything's getting presented, because we don't have a trainer in all those locations. That, I would say, is huge.
Yeah, having help desk or an AV or office services team involved is critical in those instances where you don't have a person on the ground. And Sean, you mentioned having headsets for people, and I'm working with a client right now where, as part of their new hire onboarding, they receive a set of Firm branded earbuds. So I think that's a good idea as well. Anything else that you wanted to add, Sean?
We talked about earbuds. We decided to go with the headsets because they're giant, obnoxious, and obvious. As far as multi-site classes, currently our LMS doesn't support that. It's either a virtual class or a single site instructor-led class. What we've done to overcome that is we will set the class to the location of firm-wide in the LMS, and then within the description of the class or within the agenda, we'll list the rooms for all 11 offices that web conferencing, video conferencing feed will be part of.
Wow, that surprises me, as comprehensive as your LMS is, that it would not support the whole multi-site thing. I would imagine that is a bit of a challenge.
You know, it was one of those things that we never really asked about when we were actually doing our look. And, you know, for the moment, it really doesn't happen often. I mean, for us, you know, we do a lot of web conference or video conferencing, so it happens in every office. So it's, we set it as firm-wide, and then we just throw the meeting rooms, you know, in the notes so people know where they need to go to in their individual offices. But as we start to do more blended learning, where we've got a live component and a web component, that has been a little bit of a, hey, where's this on the development map?
Right. And that brings up an important part, something I'm covering on the LMS toolkit, is coming up with your requirements and then figuring out which ones you're willing to give on and which ones you're not, and thoroughly testing. Try it before you buy it, as we say. Yep. So do you segregate your classes by role in any way? And if so, what challenges or benefits has that presented at your firm?
We do. Historically, even before I got here almost 10 years ago, classes were broken up between attorney and staff. We've gone away from that probably in the last couple of years. What we're doing now is, if we break up the classes, and it really depends on content, we try to break up between content creators and content reviewers. You know, we've got a lot of attorneys who said, I don't want to attend the shortened attorney version of the course because I do a lot of this work. Can I attend the staff class? And, you know, yeah, sure, no problem. So instead of lumping things together into, you know, staff and attorneys, the way we do it, and we've seen a huge boost in attendance because of it, we say, if you create content all on your own, these are the classes you need to attend. If you review content that others create, these are the classes that you need to attend. And it's been really well received, and we've been using it going forward now for 3 years. It's worked out well.
Great. I like that approach to things, dividing it up by content creators and content reviewers. What about you, Claire? What are you doing?
We don't separate or segregate our classes really by roles anymore. We used to, like Sean, but we tend to open up our classes now by topic and subject matter more than role. We do occasionally have the need to make items only attorney available. For example, one thing that we do make, as I said, attorney available only is our ATP recordings. ATP is our attorney training program. So any webinars or virtual training that we have as part of that program and has been recorded with them in attendance, we will keep them and we will publish them on the LMS, but we will keep them as attorney only available. So that's the only difference we make. Apart from that, everything else is a big wide open platform, and our classes and material are cataloged by topic.
Got it. And I'm assuming for those ATP classes that your LMS gives you the option by group of kind of limiting who sees those.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Right. That's how we do it. Audience type. Yep.
Right. So that's a common LMS feature, is either group or, you know, role. And Lida, what are you doing? Are you segregating or not? And what challenges or benefits have you seen?
For the most part, I would say all of our courses are open as well. We do, in the course description, we'll put the target audience so people know. And typically the communication about those courses only go to the specific target audiences. We've experimented a few times, you know, where they would say, oh, we only want attorneys to attend this class or people in this practice group to attend or whatever. And then invariably there were always exceptions to the rule. And then you're trying to figure out how to add those exceptions to the rule. And really, for the most part, most people generally only sign up for classes that apply to their role or that they need. So we really have found it easier to just, if somebody signs up that shouldn't, just to let that one person know that, hey, this is really targeted to a different audience. And they're always like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. So we found that actually is easier. And it honestly, it happens so rarely. I mean, I want to say maybe one or two people in a year accidentally sign up for something that maybe wasn't intended for them. So for the most part, we have just found it easier to keep it open and just have, you know, have it clear in the description who the target audience is.
So is that something that you just put in the description for the course of the session, or have you actually maybe set up a target audience field or a custom field for that?
Actually, both. We'll put it in the description because that's what the users when they're looking at the course description. But then we also, in the catalog side of things, we'll put the target audience, because if they want to search by target audience, they could do that. So if there is a target audience for a particular class, we will actually put that in there on the back end. But we, as far as restricting who can see it or who can sign up, we for the most part, don't do that.
So I think that's a great idea, is having a target audience out there. I also really like Sean's idea of having them for, you know, content producers and content reviewers. So some great ideas that you guys have shared. So continuing with you, Lida, who actually does the scheduling of classes in your LMS, and why is it handled that way?
Actually, there's three trainers and we all schedule the classes. Really, for the most part, we all do the classes. Generally, each one of us is assigned a different class for that month, and we usually will just schedule our own classes, although sometimes, you know, we might help each other out. We have other people using the LMS, which kind of leads into the next question. So I don't know if you want me to hold off on part two of that answer.
Yeah, why don't we wait on that one? So then I guess we'll move along to Sean, who does your scheduling.
For recursive training, the individual trainers that are hosting or, you know, running those sessions are in charge of putting those in the LMS. When it comes to firm-wide rollouts, large-scale projects, that falls on me. I'll do the bulk upload and just create all the classes for the entire month or two at a time.
Having a bulk upload feature is a real boon for when you are scheduling for rollouts, because that can be really time consuming for sure.
I can schedule all 11 offices in about 15 minutes, and that includes putting the spreadsheet together.
Sweet. Nice. Claire, how about you? How are you handling the scheduling of classes in the LMS, and why?
For the monthly sessions that are taking place in each of the offices, the trainers in those offices will be responsible for scheduling their own classes in the LMS and new hires that they are responsible for. So those will be handled by them. For wider, for example, like rollouts and various items like that, we will assign somebody, but we also have to handle that. We're very lucky to have a lady who does our e-learning specialist. She's an e-learning specialist, and she also is an LMS really administrator for us for Saba. So she's very knowledgeable about how it all works, how it all fits together. So she will help with any issues or any problems that we have. And if there's a more complicated sort of schedule to upload or to input, that's what she'll do. So we're very lucky there to have her. For the rest of the time, we have, you know, as I said, the trainers will be responsible. And we take a trainer each month to be responsible for once, for example, we have something called Client Central, which is our intranet site. An application on our intranet site, and we run regular weekly sessions for that that anybody can sign up to if they need to. We'll take a particular trainer for each month to be responsible to input those type of sessions in, so we try to share the load.
So are you actually offering classes to your clients? Is that part of Client Central?
No, it's not actually training for the client. It's a platform whereby for sharing content client and matter working and projects. So
gotcha.
The attorneys can actually share their content and work with the clients, and we train on how to do that.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So continuing along, what other departments or groups in your firm are using the LMS for scheduling classes, and who can add those classes and schedule them?
Right. This is where it gets more complicated, because we could have other departments who want to use the LMS and do. For example, we have professional development. We have HR, increasingly a number of sessions requested by HR, and to a limited extent, IT, but mainly HR and professional development are the big two that have come along and wanted more to be able to do their own sessions, etc. Now, the only problem really there is it is quite a complicated process in Saba to do these items. So we have, up till now, we very tightly controlled that by either myself or a couple of leaders on the team to control that. As we've got more familiar with the product ourselves, we have conducted training sessions for key individuals in those departments to train them and show them how to schedule classes. So we have a very limited number of people, shall we say, for want of a better word, allowed to do that. And we closely monitor and have a meeting exactly what it is. So they don't have, in other words, they don't have free will and availability to just go and upload some sessions when they want to. They would first certainly have to come to us first to say what it is that they're uploading or what they want to do. And we would say, yes, okay, and give guidance to how they should be labeled and named. And they would then go off and do it themselves now and come back to us if they've got any problems. But they certainly, we don't allow anybody to just have that availability to just go in and do it themselves.
So you bring up a couple of really good points, you know, with your taxonomy for course names and descriptions and things like that, and also course length, and then conflicts that might happen with ongoing rollouts or other projects. So there really needs to be that kind of tight coordination between everyone who's, you know, offering items. So Lida, what about you?
We have several departments using our LMS. So I'm in the IT department. And initially, when I first came here 2.5 years ago, the IT department was the only department using the LMS. Now business development uses it, or our marketing group, HR uses it. And they're probably the two biggest users outside of IT. And they both have a dedicated person in their group who schedules their own classes. We didn't start out that way initially, kind of like Claire. We started doing it for them, kind of found out what it was exactly they were doing, and then helped train them so that they could do it themselves. We really didn't want to be for them to have to wait on us to get their classes on the calendar, to be able to get their rosters and update attendance. And they even have rights if somebody wants to switch from one class to another, they can manage all of their own attendance and signing people up for their courses. And then several of the other departments, our library services, legal personnel, records, and accounting have all used it, but generally it's been in coordination with our department. So it's been a little mixed, but if they started to use it a lot more, we would probably do the same thing as we've done for business development and HR, and, you know, offer to train somebody in their department so they can manage it themselves internally.
Great, great. And you bring up a good point, and that is the ability of the LMS to allow for various roles for people and being able to assign a role and grant those rights. So that's something if people are looking at purchasing an LMS to definitely kind of map out and consider. Sean, what about you?
Well, pretty much all of our admin departments at some point in time use the LMS. We don't allow them to do any class creation or scheduling on their own. They fill out a request form, it goes to the training department, and one of the four of us will create their class, schedule it, and then provide them with a registration link.
That's a great way to handle it. So you've actually developed a workflow for that versus letting them in there and go into town on their own.
Uh-huh.
So a couple of different approaches. Does anybody else have anything to add before we wrap up today?
I think the only thing I was going to say is I've gotten a couple of great ideas from Claire and Sean, so thank you.
That's awesome. So the whole reason for doing this series is to give people some different ideas and considerations if they're just getting started with an LMS. So I really appreciate all of your time today and hope that everyone will be joining me in January for the corresponding peer share and then our next podcast in February. As Randy Mays, ILTA's executive director, says, tell a friend about ILTA.